All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday, December 9th, 2020 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Udaly. Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty. Wheeler.
Commissioner Hardesty will be joining us about 2:30, and I am here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these precautions as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience as we manage through this challenging situation to conduct the city's business. We'll now hear the rules of order and decorum from legal counsel. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. To participate in city council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt. And just because we had to move a number of items off our morning agenda to the afternoon agenda, public testimony this afternoon will be 2 minutes per person. We won't be too strenuous about it, but try and keep your remarks to 2 minutes. And I'm sorry, which item were we on? Was it 968? We were in the middle of one of them. What was it?
Yes, it was 968.
968. And so I felt terribly having to interrupt that. Do we have staff here? I think they just got to the point where they were going to ask us if we had follow-up questions, but I don't want to presume that.
Hi, Mayor. Kathleen Brennis Marua, interim officer. I was going to hand it off to Rhonda Faust, project manager. She had a brief presentation and was going to talk about the project scope, but it's you all.
No, that's fine. And I apologize very much that we had to cut off the presentation, but we lost our quorum. So thank you for indulging us, sort of doing both a morning and an afternoon version of this presentation. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Keelan, if you could help me and start the presentation, that would be most helpful. For the record, my name is Rhonda Faust. I am the project manager for this joint project between Environmental Services and the Water Bureau. I should mention today that I have with me, joining me, Joe Dvorak from Environmental Services, Jody Inman from the Water Bureau, and also Sarah Harpole and Roger Gonzalez from Prosper Portland, in case there's questions that come up that they can best address. I'll do my best to be brief so that we can move on the agenda, but if I do miss any details, feel free to ask at the end. Next slide, please. So back in September of this year, Prosper Portland brought a number of actions related to the Broadway corridor effort to City Council. And on the heels of those approvals, we're here today with a request that will facilitate offsite sanitary, storm, and water infrastructure work related to the United States Post Office redevelopment. We're requesting, as Kathleen mentioned earlier, alternative delivery for reasons that Kathleen touched on, but I'll explain from a project perspective. Next slide. Our work is one of many planned projects, both public and private, for the on the USPS site. And our on-site work, much of the on-site work is contingent upon the completion of our off-site work. So in coordination with Prosper Portland, conversations have centered around the schedule and timing of our work. Next slide, please. And a little bit more detail about the work that we plan to do. We will increase sanitary capacity by upsizing some pipes adjacent to the project area, and then replace some pipes that are in poor condition, do some system cleanup to address some redundancy in our sanitary and combined systems, install water improvements, and ensure continuity of service for businesses and residents in the project area with bypass laterals. Next slide. Now we're requesting alternative delivery, specifically the Construction Manager General Contractor, or CMGC, method for a few reasons. Meeting schedule expectations, as I mentioned earlier, is a major consideration for this project so that the on-site work can proceed as planned. This delivery method allows us to intentionally look for schedule efficiencies during the design phase with a contractor. And then also BES designers who are designing this project can work through technical aspects collaboratively with the contractor to help reduce construction risks, such as schedule delays and costly change orders. And then lastly, the package that Prosper brought to you all in September included a provision to aggregate public infrastructure costs and apply a community benefits agreement to Broadway corridor projects. So to that end, we are working with Prosper on the details, including setting up the oversight committee, as well as expectations around the workforce and subcontracting goals that are a part of the CBA. Next slide. And then quickly, just to show you an overview of a simplified overview of the project schedule, as Kathleen mentioned, we anticipate being back in front of council and in about a year to request your approval on a guaranteed maximum price that would cover construction, which is currently estimated between $5 and $6 million. And then our expectation is that the work would be completed by early 2023. Next slide. So in the factual findings, which is part of your ordinance package, as Kathleen mentioned, that's where we make our case that alternative delivery is appropriate for this project. And listed here are some of the criteria that we cover. There's many more, but overall, we feel that the CMGC contracting method will support project goals, as well as the city's commitment to social and racial equity in construction contracting. Final slide here. So with that, we are recommending you accept the factual findings and authorize an exemption from competitive low bid procurement. And with that, I'll turn it back to you all if you have any questions, and that concludes my presentation.
Very good, good presentation. Colleagues, any questions? All right, good, I'm not seeing any. Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up for this item, Mayor.
All right, good. Then this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you both Rhonda and Kathleen for a very, very good presentation. And again, thank you for your patience. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you, Mayor.
That takes us to all the way down, it looks like to 9. Well, why don't we do 963 and then we'll do 976. Does that work, Commissioner Fritz, in that order?
No, I think we'll do the 963 with the other pipe project.
Okay, so you want to go to 976 next then?
Yes, please.
Okay, can we please call 976?
Oh, wait a minute, 976? That's not mine. So I'm saying yes. Or is it mine?
Wasn't it 63 and 65?
Hang on.
Sorry.
76 is Water Bureau. We moved that to the afternoon.
It's about 6:05.
So let's do the time certain. Let's do the 978 time certain, and then we'll go to the Water Bureau ones afterwards.
Okay, let's go ahead. That makes sense. Keelan, let's go ahead and do 978, please.
And I believe we want the three items read together, please. Do we? Is that right?
You're right. Yes, 978, 979, and 98. Thank you.
978. Authorize three price agreements for on-call services for comprehensive environmental response, compensation, and liability act technical assistance at the Portland Harbor Superfund site in the amount of $5,500,000.
All right, Commissioner Fritz, you're up. We need to read the other two. Sorry. I'm orchestrating this out of my kitchen table, and if you saw the horrific mess, you might have a better understanding. Please read the other ones, Keelan.
Sure thing. 979, authorize a sole source price agreement with GSI Water Solutions, Inc. for legal support regarding Portland Harbor Superfund site in the amount of $1,650,000. And 980, authorize the Director of the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into an administrative settlement agreement and order on consent with the United States Environmental Protection Agency for funding remedial design at Swan Island Basin.
Thank you. Now, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. And may I just say that you've been in charge of both parks and environmental services for most of this year, in addition to all your duties as mayor, in addition to the rest of your portfolio. I'm scurrying to keep up with everything in my portfolio right now. So I have a renewed appreciation for you and your staff having done it very graciously.
Thank you.
Anyway, these three ordinances are a package intended to move the City of Portland forward on its obligations under the Portland Harbor Superfund Cleanup Plan, which is overseen by the United States Environmental Protection Agency. The City of Portland, working with private and public parties, has made substantial progress on the design phase of the cleanup plan and in engaging and partnering with underserved communities. These ordinances will address the next steps needed, specifically around work in Willamette Cove, River Mile 11 East, and Swan Island basis, as well as to continue the city's technical and legal work related to Portland Harbor. Here today to give an update on the Superfund program and these ordinances are Annie Von Berg, Environmental Policy Manager for Environmental Services, and Nancy Klinger, Senior Deputy City Attorney.
Hello, Mayor, and hello, Commissioners. Thank you so much for that introduction. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here and get the PowerPoint up. Let's see. And just to confirm, can you all see that?
Yep.
Excellent. Alrighty, thanks again for your time today. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned, I'm Annie Von Berg. I'm the Environmental Remediation Manager at Bureau of Environmental Services. I'm here today with my colleagues, Nancy Klinger, the lead attorney for Portland Harbor Superfund, and Cindy Riles, the technical manager, to present for your consideration three ordinances, items 978 through 980, all supporting the city's efforts in the Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup. So because it's been about 1 year since we've been to you all, I wanted to provide just a very high-level status update on where we're at with the project and also give you some results of two actions that you took last year involving creating funds for a new community involvement program and to create a trust with the state of Oregon for $24 million. And then we'll also review the three ordinances before you today that include three fixed price agreements, one sole source contract, and an agreement on consent with EPA to move forward with Swan Island. So just a very quick recap to remind everybody here, the Portland Harbor Superfund is was designated in 2000. So this month marks 20 years that it's been designated a Superfund. This is a 20-mile stretch of contaminated riverbed about from Sylvie Island to the Broadway Bridge. According to estimates from EPA, we're looking about 30 years until we reach cleanup levels, cleanup goals, and at a cost of over $1 billion. The city is amongst 150 parties responsible for cleaning up this portion of the river. And we're currently in an out-of-court settlement process to determine who pays for what, and we're still years away from understanding exactly what that looks like. This is an extremely complex project, so you'll notice the dollars are huge, and these are really long timelines, but we do see and recognize that it's one of the most complicated sediment sites in the nation. So as I said, we are 20 years into this project. We have now moved out of the analysis and investigation phase, and we are in remedy design phase. This is an exciting part of the process because it gets us one step closer to actually the construction portion where we're in the river and cleaning up the sediment. This part of the process is comprised of many components, but some of the major ones include engineering analysis, data collection, and institutional controls. But ultimately, the objective for this phase of the project is to create engineered blueprints that help guide the cleanup construction that will happen in the river. So it helps guide the capping and dredging that we'll see. As we move into this phase of the project, we have begun hard work on developing a new public involvement program for the City of Portland. Last year, Council approved funds dedicated for this effort, and we've spent a year listening and gathering feedback from environmental justice communities, over 45 community groups, and over 500 Portlanders to co-create this process. And I'll give you just a very quick recap of what that looks like. If anybody is interested for additional information, I'm happy to get those more detailed briefings for you. So after a year of listening and understanding community priorities, we ended up with four pillars or four goals of this program, which are to support meaningful involvement of environmental justice communities, making sure that we have a community-informed decision-making process, to improve Portlanders' understanding of the Superfund cleanup process, to increase transparency and communication and collaboration amongst the public entities, and to expand public access to the Portland Harbor information that's created as we move forward in the cleanup. Two initiatives for using that architecture of this new program, we've kicked off two initiatives over the last year. First, we have a grant program that is dedicated to help community groups increase capacity so they can help us understand their priorities as we move forward in remedy designs. The first five awardees we have in this cycle is the Black Education Achievement Movement, Blueprint Foundation, Portland Audubon, Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, and the Portland Harbor Community Coalition. The second initiative that we kicked off with these funds is a collaboration with the state and the Port of Portland is Willamette Cove Roundtable. This is a roundtable that helps us look at how we can create local opportunities as a result of this work. This also looks and acts as a venue for ongoing communication with community groups and helps to ensure that we understand what community priorities are as we're moving into these designs specific to the Willamette Cove area. And as we shift out to the broader remedy design area of the 10-mile stretch, EPA decided to kind of carve up this 10-mile stretch into smaller, more manageable areas. In this slide, you can see the red and blue circles there. And depending on how the final boundaries shape up, they ended up getting about 17 to 18 smaller sites. And what that did is it presented a tricky and unique situation for the City of Portland. Because we have potential liability sprinkled throughout this 10-mile stretch, we needed to figure out a way to both meet our public obligation and our legal obligation, and at the same time, do what we could to try to advance broader movement and make sure that this just didn't get stalled out for years to come. So with that, we partnered with the state of Oregon, who also faces similar challenges in that respect. And we came up with a way to pool and cap resources to encourage that site-wide progress and to make sure we did as much as we could to cap and restrict those public obligations. This partnership allowed us to gain legal protections, and it allowed us to receive credits from EPA towards what our ultimate obligation for the cleanup costs will be. This partnership created a trust of a combined $24 million that offered $80,000 an acre to parties to sign an agreement with EPA and get their portions moving. So we're happy to report back after a year that this was very successful. We ended up with nearly 20 parties taking advantage of our offer. We ended up having every site on the entire west side of the 10 miles under agreement with EPA and working, and overall 80% of the entire site under agreement with EPA. So overall, a unique approach that we took here, and it really paid off.
Annie, question. Are the blue areas the ones that aren't in alignment? Oh, there, just your next slide answers the question, sorry.
Oh yeah, no problem. Let's see, did I get to the right? Yeah, so the filled in spots here, you'll see this is a visual representation of the areas that we're contributing to, areas that took advantage of our offer, and two unique areas that I'm not sure if you can see my cursor here, but River Mile 11 and Willamette Cove, these two. These two are a little unique that we didn't just provide funding to satisfy our legal obligation. We are actually a performing party that's responsible for the work there. The other filled in areas are areas that we contributed dollars as part of that funding offer. And then that satisfies our obligation for this phase of the project. For in terms of those green, or I'm sorry, the blue circles, yeah, those are areas that still have not reached an agreement with EPA yet. And I'll go to the next slide. So like I mentioned, with the two projects that we are doing work on, we're now, we have been for the last year preparing to do that work. This is really specialized work that requires highly specialized firms. We're looking at geotechnical services, hydrologists, environmental statisticians, and environmental chemists. The first ordinance that you'll see before you today is our effort to bring those technical services to our team to help us with that work. So to get this these specialists on board, we've been going through the procurement process for the last year. Because this is a unique type of work and specialized field, we really challenged parties in our RFP process to help us meet one of the city's goals, which is advancing utilization of disadvantaged firms. So currently there are no certified COVID firms that do this type of work. So it required us to get really creative in how we might help create a market to help future firms meet this. So we'll go over a little bit further in the presentation of how we met that challenge and what those creative solutions look like. And I'll pass that, that'll soon go over to Cindy that will go over that. But before I pass that over, just a quick overview of the three ordinances that you're looking at for your consideration today. That is three price agreements that will provide technical support for our project work. It's one sole source contract that will help our technical assistance for our ongoing legal defense. And lastly, there's an ordinance requesting authorization for us to enter into an agreement on consent with EPA for Swan Island. So with that, I'm gonna pass this over to Cindy Riles, Technical Manager for Portland Harbor. She's gonna briefly go over both River Mile 11 and Willamette Cove, a few characteristics of that site and then the associated contracts for that. So Cindy, over to you.
Thanks, Annie. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. As Annie mentioned, while site-wide and programmatic activities related to the Portland Harbor Superfund site are ongoing, the site has been broken up into smaller areas for the purposes of completing the current engineering design phase of the work. The city is actively performing the technical work in two of these smaller areas. They're called River Mile 11 East and Willamette Cove. And two of the three price agreements under the first ordinance we're talking about today are related to these two areas. So I'll speak briefly about each of those and then move on to the third price agreement. This slide is another version of the Superfund site. It shows the Willamette River with the full Superfund site outlined in blue. You can see the two smaller project areas, 11 East and Willamette Cove, labeled there. They're both on the east side of the river. 11 East is roughly between the Fremont and Broadway bridges, and Willamette Cove is about a mile upriver of Cathedral Park. Next slide, please. The River Mill 11 East project area covers approximately 36 acres of river and has been undergoing cleanup activities since 2013. The city is working with five other parties to conduct environmental sampling and engineering design for cleanup in this area. These other parties are PacifiCorp, Cargill, Dill Trust, CBS Corporation, and Glacier Northwest. The work is overseen by EPA, and the group gives regular updates on their progress directly to the community at EPA-led public forums. The price agreement before you today supports the city's role in this larger group. Next slide, please. River Mile 11 East is very technically complex due to active industrial activities and physical features of the site that make cleanup challenging, such as buried utility cables that cross the river and oversteepened riverbanks that make dredging and capping challenging. The environmental work in the slides that you're looking at right now shows some of the concrete steps involved in collecting more detailed data to support the engineering blueprint for cleanup. This work was conducted over the past few months at 11 East. Next slide. In this work, each party brings their own technical assistance to the table. So this price agreement is for the city's technical assistance. This work requires engineers and scientists who are highly specialized, as Annie mentioned, specifically sediment remediation engineers, in addition to the other professions that she mentioned, geotechnical engineers, hydrogeologists, statisticians, and chemists. This agreement was awarded through a competitive bid process to Moll Foster Alonji, often abbreviated as MFA. It is an on-call price agreement for up to $750,000 over 5 years. MFA's employee base is 54% women, which exceeds the industry average for female employees by nearly 30%. There is a 30% COVID goal in the price agreement, and MFA has named a majority of COVID-certified subcontractors. However, as we keep mentioning, the vast majority of this work is performed by just a few specialized sediment remediation engineers and scientists. In order to creatively address the COVID goal, the awardee has committed to mentoring COVID firms over the course of the price agreement. Specifically, MFA will be working with Akana, a Native American-owned environmental consultancy specializing in workforce development services supporting women, minorities, and displaced community members. Next slide, please. Now I'll talk briefly about the Willamette Cove price agreement, which is very similar in nature to the 11 East agreement, but for a different area of the river. The Willamette Cove project area is also undergoing engineering design, and here the city is partnering with the Port of Portland and the Oregon Department of State Lands to perform the work. Historically, this area was a dry dock that supported ship construction, as shown in the upper left picture of the slide, as well as activities related to a sawmill and other industrial activities. While the site looks very different today, as shown in the lower picture, contamination still remains in the sediment at the bottom of the river. This is one of the only publicly owned areas within the Superfund site and has been identified as a priority by both the community and the participating public agencies. We are right now wrapping up the first steps to help with design, which included sampling of sediment and water. And multiple sampling techniques were used due to the large amount of debris at the bottom of the river in this area. The EPA agreement for this work was signed by the city, state, port, and settling federal agencies at the end of 2019. In our partnership with the other performing parties, we are paying equal shares towards remedy design. Similar to the work at 11 East, each party brings their own technical support to the table. And the price agreement before you for Willamette Cove represents support for the technical services required for our participation in this project. Next slide. Like the 11 East price agreement, this was also an on-call price agreement for $750,000 over 5 years and was awarded through a competitive bid process to MFA. There is also a 30% COVID goal on this agreement, and like for 11 East, most of the work will be done by sediment remediation engineers. MFA will provide mentoring services to Akana under this price agreement as well. Next slide. So the third price agreement that is a part of this first ordinance is for general Superfund technical support for the city. This price agreement is for $4 million over 5 years. This price agreement will support all of the city's technical work outside of the specific 11 East and Willamette Cove project areas. This includes projects such as stormwater source control coordination and other harbor-wide technical support. This price agreement is the product of over a 9-month procurement process to seek out specialized services for the city's role in the Superfund cleanup at large. The first place candidate for this award unfortunately did not clear terms of the agreement regarding conflicts of interest. This illustrates the challenge of working on such complex projects with connections to ongoing legal cases involving over 100 parties, and is an example of challenges we may continue to face moving forward. Negotiations were terminated with the first place proposer, and the second place proposer was awarded the price agreement, which is GSI Water Solutions. GSI is a local consulting firm that began as an emerging small business. 50% of their management team is women, including the head of their board of directors. There is a 30% co-bid goal on this price agreement, and GSI has recognized the challenge of the lack of COVID certified firms in this highly specialized field and has also committed to conducting outreach for job openings to groups representing minorities and disadvantaged communities. They have also hired a DEI consultant to conduct internal training within their firm. And that concludes the presentation for the price agreements under the first ordinance. I'd like to introduce Nancy Klinger with the city's attorney's office, who will discuss the remaining two ordinances.
Let me just make sure there aren't any questions. This might be a good breaking point. Our colleagues, are there any questions at this point? All right, you're good to go. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm Nancy Klinger. And the second ordinance before you is a sole source price agreement. This is to authorize continuation of the specialized technical services that support the city's legal defense. This is our expert witness testimony. The awardee is GSI Water Solution. It is for a contract of $1.65 million over a period of 5 years. The City of Portland, as has been mentioned, is one of over 100 parties that are participating in an out-of-court settlement process that'll determine who will pay for the cleanup, which is a critical element in getting the cleanup finished at the end, is having the cleanup paid for. And GSI has been providing development of the city's legal case, and this is to continue that legal support as we are still in the midst of negotiations. They've been an integral part in developing our positions, and they have firsthand knowledge of all of the interrelated technical and legal aspects of the city's defense. So this contract is to continue those services as we go into settlement negotiations. Okay. And the final ordinance is for remedial design at the Swan Island Basin. And this is exciting to be presenting this because this has been a challenge. This is an agreement with EPA to have 100% design completed at one of the largest and most complex areas within Portland Harbor. The agreement is among private parties and public parties. It includes Vigor, a shipyard operator, an industrial operator, Daimler North America, the Port of Portland, the city, the state, and numerous federal defense agencies. The private parties are doing the work of remedial design, and the public entities, including the city, are providing funding. The city is providing a fixed payment of $3.6 million over the course of 3 years. EPA recognizes in the agreement this amount paid, and it will go towards the city's ultimate settlement of liabilities. This was a heavy lift to get this area and to get these parties to the table. And I'm thrilled that we have this in place. The key aspects of the agreement is that the city's funding is capped. We are not a performing party and doing the work. This is not using city staff. We are a funding party. And that the parties that are doing the work are the industrial parties that will be continuing to operate within the Swan Island Basin. The city and the other public funds that go toward this will be held in a trust where EPA is the beneficiary. That trust must meet the EPA and the state of Oregon's requirements for holding public funds. In exchange, the city receives a receipt covenant from EPA for the funds paid, which acknowledges that this money has been paid and goes to our ultimate settlement. Just to be clear, and so that you know the risks, if the performing parties were to fail to perform as legally required, EPA does retain a right to pursue any party in Portland Harbor to complete the cleanup, complete the design at Swan Island, and that would include the public entities. But this was a major accomplishment and is now before you for your consideration and approval. And that is the end of our presentation. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Very good, good.
Colleagues?
I know Hardesty doing this as well. Any questions on these? Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Annie, for that presentation. I guess my question is about the sole source agreement contract. I've noticed that since 2005, we've been contracting with this one firm, and now we've just been extending, and now we're doing a sole source agreement. Why?
Would you like to, Annie? Go ahead.
Sure. We have reached the limitations and can no longer, under procurement code, extend any longer. So what we're providing you is a solution. The fact that we need to be able to have a continuity of service with GSI for our legal case, we're requesting that this be sole source and issued to them alone. But Nancy, if you have anything else to add, please do.
No, it also is part and parcel to the fact that this is a legal case that has been pending for more than 15 years. And so part of why the contract is extended is that they have been developing the work for our legal defense, been part of our legal process, and that process is ongoing. So it's a continuation of services.
And so is the assumption that there's no other firm qualified to represent us on behalf of the EPA?
At this point, it would be very difficult for the city to find a firm that would have the same level of experience and has the understanding of the city's legal position who is not already working for another one of the parties. This was originally put out and was a competitive bid. As it's gone in the years when it was renewed, there were no other parties or firms that put in to do this work.
So actually, we've only done a competitive bid the first time we put this out. We've just extended since that time. And so I get very concerned when a city extends contracts out for a long period of time and then comes back and says, well, these are the only people that are able to do it because these are the only ones we've worked with for 9 years. So, because it doesn't give us the opportunity to actually have competitive bids when we wait so long to go back out with an RFP. So I'm not doubting that this might be the right firm. It might be the right time. It might make perfect sense. But it is a trend that I've seen at the city that I find very problematic because you won the first bid doesn't mean you get to, for the life of the project, make money off of the city of Portland. So just wanted to have that on the record as to why this is so and why this, why we waited so long to actually either go back out to bid or to actually make it a sole source a while ago. I get concerned when we do that. And it's no reflection on your work. I know that this is one of those mammoth projects that is taking decades for us to get a handle on. So I'm not complaining about the quality of the work. I am just very concerned that we have this history at the city of doing just these kind of projects and then having them lead to a sole source contract. Thank you.
Understood.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Normally, I agree with you on the need to go out for rebidding. This is for a legal team. It would be like changing your lawyer in the middle of a defense case. So in particular, with all of the confidentiality issues involved, I would be really concerned about rebidding it at this point. So that was why I was comfortable having it on the agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Any further questions before I ask Keelan about public testimony? Keelan, do we have any public testimony for 978, 979, or 980?
No one signed up, Mayor.
All right. Well, then we'll get to the vote. We have all of our commissioners present. To 978, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Thank you very much to the team. You've been so diligent over 20 years now. Admittedly, it's not, Nancy may have been on for the 20 years and certainly for the 12 that I've been involved in this issue. So thank you very, very much. And it was kind of daunting to hear Annie say that it's going to be another 30 years before we're fully cleaned up. I just appreciate the dedicated staff who are making sure that we're doing the right thing and engaging community members. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you for the presentation and the briefings. I'm new to this, and the amount of time it takes is daunting. So I'm really particularly interested in Lima Cove, so I wanna dive in a little deeper. I just have childhood roots there, if you will. So anyway, I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you for the incredible work. Yes, it is daunting to think that we'll be at this for the next two decades and trying to correct this environmental catastrophe. I'm greatly appreciative of the due diligence of staff and the hard work that you've done to bring us to this point. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Great work. I appreciate it. And I want to thank Sam and Asena for my office for keeping me abreast of all of this. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. 979, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
I've already put my concerns on the record as it relates to sole source agreements. The answers I got made sense. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Ordinance is adopted. 980.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next up are 963 and 976, and I've had a request from the Bureau to read those together. 963 and 976.
963, authorized contract with Jacobs Engineering Group, Inc. for design services for the Bull Run Pipeline Project for $29 million. And 976, approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements and authorize the use of the alternative contracting method of construction manager, general contractor in connection with the Bull Run Pipeline Project for an estimated amount of $162,900,000.
Very good. From mine, I'd turn it over to staff for Commissioner Fritz, as I'll let her make that decision.
Thank you. So these contracts address the design and construction procurement for large diameter pipelines, which are needed to deliver filtered water by the city's September 2027 compliance deadline with the Oregon Health Authority. As a friendly reminder, these actions are specific to designing and building drinking water pipelines and do not address the filtration treatment. That's the first one. The Bullrun Filtration Project will protect our health, support our economy, and safeguard our future. The project will use proven technology to deliver safe, clean drinking water to better serve our community. This project, again, is required by the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act and must be completed by September 30th, 2027, which is why it's before you today. The project has many moving parts with hard deadlines set by the EPA. Any delay will make it difficult to meet those deadlines and severely limit any future flexibility. And colleagues, I did ask the bureaus, could this be delayed until the new council? And I was told that no, that would severely set back the timeline and potentially put us out of compliance. In November 2019, City Council Resolution 37460 set direction for two pipelines to and from the water filtration facility to maximize gravity flow, reduce future impacts to the filtration facility neighborhood, and provide a more resilient, easier to maintain system. The connecting pipelines will be key to a more reliable and resilient water system. The design contract will make sure that the new pipes are designed to deliver water for more than 150 years. The construction management general contractor procurement leads to selecting a contractor with a proven record of meeting equity goals and with demonstrated experience building a project of this size and importance. In addition, this investment in water infrastructure will create about 7,500 jobs to help boost Oregon's economy in the recovery from the pandemic. I'll now introduce Water Bureau Director Gabriel Solmer.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Fritz. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, and thank you again for that introduction. I am Gabe Solmer. I am the director of the Portland Water Bureau, and with me today are Benita Oswald, who's leading our project communications to describe our work so far and community engagement, Nikki Pozos, who's leading the capacity building program work for this project and will speak to our equity commitments, Jody Inman, who is helping to manage the pipeline work and will speak to the specifics of the two ordinances before you today, and Interim Chief Procurement Officer Kathleen Renes-Mura, who is also with us today to provide the procurement recommendation. Next slide. So this is a program that is new to some of you and familiar, but perhaps not top of mind for some of you. So a big thank you to every council office who took our briefings to better understand where we are along this 10-year timeline. I'm incredibly indebted to you and to your wonderful staff for the excellent feedback and questions. In 2017, Council tasked the Water Bureau to build a new water filtration facility and pipelines to comply with Federal Safe Drinking Water Act regulations. And I know that deciding on treatment methods was a difficult choice, weighing values of cost, resilience, future regulations, and public health. After Council voted for filtration, we signed a bilateral compliance agreement with the EPA and Oregon Health Authority that requires the city to complete the filtration treatment plant by September 30th, 2027. Bullrun filtration will further protect our health, support our economy, and prepare us for the future, keeping our water safe and abundant for generations to come. Next slide. And with that context, I'll move into today's council action, which focuses on the new pipes that are needed to connect the future filtration facility to our existing water system. I know everyone's glad we're talking about pipelines today and the facility. And just to set the stage, these two ordinances before you today are the final contracting pieces of the puzzle. Last year in November 2019, council passed a resolution that set direction for, as Commissioner Fritz said, two pipelines to and from the filtration facility to enhance system reliability. You were also clear that you wanted more information so that you could make the best decisions possible, and these actions today will allow us to gather that information for you. With pipeline planning now complete, we're here today to request authorization of the design services contract and the alternative procurement for the new pipelines. And I'll go over where we are in the process so that you can see what those next steps are and have those that context in mind. Obviously, a lot has changed in the world and for the project in the last year. Last month, we achieved the first of three major compliance milestones with the submittal of the pilot study and the project definition report to the Oregon Health Authority. And as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, approval of the pipeline design contract and the alternative procurement are essential steps in keeping us on track to meet the next compliance milestone. That's October of 2022 to ensure our ability to provide City Council in 2023 the guaranteed maximum price for the pipeline and other facilities. And finally, this work all comes together to meet the ultimate requirement of a finished filtration plant in 2027, making our water safer for the nearly 1 million people who use our water today and for future generations. Next slide. And I know that budgets are on all of our minds, the council budget, as well as all of our household budgets, which are being stretched and strained by the pandemic and the economic downturn. And I know it seems a while ago, but I heard the sober news this morning from Travel Portland. I know that this is really hitting every part of our world. And as you know, we work closely with the Bureau of Environmental Services as our fellow bureau to look at our overall utility bills and how those are hitting household budgets across the city and our service area. We're constantly innovating and conversing on how to support our customers and how to structure our projects to best support the economy, which is really the people and the businesses who pay those bills every month or every quarter. So I don't want to say just trust me on all of these budgets. I want to show you the numbers that I have seen. Next slide. So you can see exactly the numbers that I'm seeing. This is a chart of the impact from this project for the typical customer and our extreme low-income customers. The rates include the cost for both of the Bull Run treatment projects, financing costs, inflation, escalation, and capitalized overhead. These are conservative estimates, but they are estimates. This is what we're basing our forecast off of. What they do not include, and I want to be clear about this as well, is any financing from the Water Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, or WIFIA. The WIFIA financing will further lower our financing costs. And while I'm confident that we'll be able to sign our WIFIA loan agreements when the new administration takes office next year, I'm also not counting any chickens before they hatch. So I want you to see what's ahead of us right now. With WIFIA, we do expect lower rate increases because of the low interest rate and the fact that payments to pay back the WIFIA loan won't start until after completion of the project, which gives us a longer runway for that to smooth our rate increases. I know that this year has brought a lot of uncertainty and economic struggle. I also know that from Flint, Michigan to the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina to the fires in Oregon this year, when water infrastructure fails to protect, the impacts are concentrated on our most vulnerable. And filtration will allow the Bull Run supply to recover more quickly from a fire, a landslide, or a major storm by helping to remove contaminants from our water. We had fires on our doorstep 1 mile from this property this year, so resiliency is on our minds. It takes 10 years to build a treatment facility, and waiting for the right time, whatever that is, could be too late. And the cost to build new treatment facilities will only increase if the project's delayed. So that cost is on our minds. In addition, this investment in water infrastructure will create thousands of jobs to help boost Oregon's economy in the wake of the pandemic. And that value of the project is also on our minds. So I know that these numbers and concepts can seem abstract. So I want to turn it over now to Benita Oswald to tell you a little bit more about how we're keeping the public and ratepayers engaged in this project and what we've heard from the community.
Thanks, Gabe. I'm trying to find where my camera went. Sorry. I'll just keep it off for now until I find it. But good afternoon, commissioners and Mayor Wheeler. My name is Bonita Oswald, and I'm coordinating the communications for the Bull Run Treatment Project. Since 2017, the Water Bureau has been committed to keeping the community informed and involved throughout the planning, design, the construction, the future operations of the Bull Run Filtration Project. As you can see, we've been doing this through a variety of channels. We've published at least 2 e-newsletters each month. We include our project information and the bill inserts and our water quality report. We have created a number of videos that we share through our social media platforms. So much of our information is published in multiple formats and languages. In addition, we're providing project briefings to a variety of environmental and cultural groups, as well as our agency partners that have direct contact with the people that have been historically underserved. We've also been working with the city's amazing tribal relations director, Laura John, to connect with the local tribes early so we can have the opportunity to best honor the native culture and the site where our facility will be built. We have also been engaged with the project site neighbors. Many are not direct Water Bureau customers, but they will certainly be impacted by our construction. We know developing this project won't be easy, but we do want to make it easier for the community. So to help inform this project, we have hosted a number of forums and information sessions over the past couple of years. We received a lot of valuable feedback, especially through our public site advisory group meetings. And all of these meetings have been recorded and posted to our website to give those who are unable to attend the meetings the ability to watch them, review the materials, and provide feedback in their own time. For pipelines, we have had a 2-hour meeting with the neighbors dedicated just to pipeline planning, which allowed for some really productive conversations. We sent out a survey to learn about the community safety concerns and preferences for the pipeline construction hours. We hosted an online open house where we collected feedback for 3 weeks on the alternative alignments for the pipelines. We also promoted these opportunities through print and e-newsletters, postcards, and social media. But in addition to that, we also sent letters and called those folks that are living along those pipeline routes. A good portion of these alignments are within easements the Water Bureau has owned for decades, but we recognize that this work can be especially disruptive for the property owners that have these easements. So early in this pipeline planning process, we began meeting with these neighbors in person to better understand their needs and make adjustments where we can possibly make them. We plan to continue these ongoing conversations as we move through the pipeline design and construction phases, and we look forward to adding designers to our team that can be part of these conversations and lend their expertise and develop solutions. So with that, I will turn it over to Nikki to talk about our equity contracting work.
Hi there. I'm Nikki Pozos with the Formation Lab. And as Benita said, I'm going to talk about equity and contracting. On the project, there's 3 different professional services contracts, as you can see here. And those percents are their commitments to the firm certified by the Oregon Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, what we call the COBID firms. So that's the disadvantaged, minority, women-owned, service-disabled, veteran-owned, and emerging small businesses. I just wanted to see if I could say that. No. It's become quite a mouthful. There's also the 2 different construction contracts, including the pipeline contract that we're talking today about, that CMGC delivery approach. And both of those are going to have community benefits agreements, and we need that CMGC delivery approach to be able to use a community benefits agreement. Overall, the Water Bureau is committed to meeting or surpassing all of the different equity and contracting requirements of the city. Next, I think. So one of the things we're doing on this project is really investing in our equity contracting partners. We've been leading a capacity building program, and it's available to all the professional services COVID certified firms. So right now it's for the program management firms and the ones on the filtration facility, and it will be extended to the firms on the pipeline contract as well that we're talking about today. I mean, you know, this program really came from a realization that if we want to increase our percents, we really need to invest in building the capacity of the firms that we're working with that are certified in this state. So the program really focuses on customized activities that are self-identified working together with the firms. And that's really coming from a respect that they know what they need right now for their firm to take themselves to the next level. And many of the support activities that they've selected have focused on more managerial versus technical support, such as strategic planning, developing new services, improved project management, and staff development. And here we have a few quotes from some of the firms that we're working with from the program management team. As I mentioned, the CMGC contracts will include community benefits agreements. Those are very complex agreements with a lot of different requirements, but here are some of them. One of them is the subcontracting requirement, the 22%. And these are a little different from the professional services because they actually specify a percent for disadvantaged and minority, the 12% for women-owned businesses, and for the middling small business, versus on the professional services where everything's kind of lumped into the COVID firm pool. And then they also go beyond just looking at subcontract business opportunities to look at workforce development with specific requirements for apprentice level and journey level workers. Again, looking at not only can we create job opportunities, but really creating careers for people of color and women in the trades. Those agreements don't get signed until later in the project. So we don't have details yet about what's the specifics for this project, but these are the requirements that will be in the CBAs. And I think I'm turning it back.
Hi, Nikki, this is Jody. I think actually it's my turn. So good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name is Jody Inman. I'm an engineering manager at the Water Bureau. And I'm going to talk a little bit more specifically about the actions that you have in front of you today. And those include the authorization to appoint Jacobs Engineering as the design contractor, and then also to allow us to use the alternative procurement for CMGC, as we've touched on. So to sort of bring us back a little bit on what exactly these pipelines component of the work is, as has been mentioned a couple of times, in 2019, November of 2019, there was a resolution that set direction for two pipes to carry water to and from the filtration facility. In the past year, since that resolution, and even before that, the project team has been, the program team has been working to gather more data, to evaluate that data, analyze that data, and use that to help inform what the proposed final sizing and alignments of those pipelines would be. Those proposed alignments are shown before you today on this presentation. The additional work that was done included field geotechnical work, wetland delineation out in the field, hazmat sampling, surveys of both topographic and property corners, some soil resistivity for corrosion, archaeological field investigations, and then we also performed some flow tests on the conduit, on the existing conduits, to be able to inform our hydraulic model. All of this additional information was used along with the feedback we received from the community to put these pipeline alignments together. The EPA has done a NEPA review on these proposed alignments and has indicated initially that there are no significant environmental impacts. To talk a little bit more about these pipelines, the two raw water pipelines are in green on the right. The raw water pipelines will connect to our existing conduits and deliver water from the Bull Run to the filtration facility. There are two finished water pipelines, which will take the treated water from the filtration facility, connect it back into our conduits for delivery to our customers. On the raw water side, there are some significant design and technical components to be worked through, and those include several creek crossings and wetland crossings, where we are planning to do trenchless technology and crossing to avoid impacting those features. We also have a challenge of the pipelines in that area sit along a bluff along the Sandy River. along Lusted Road, and the filtration facility is higher. So you will see toward close to the filtration facility, we have a black line, and that is trying to show a significant tunnel that needs to be constructed to ensure that we have the seismic reliability that is planned and part of this project. And there will be a large vertical shaft on the filtration facility that will receive that. As we pointed out, that in addition to connecting our conduits and existing system to the filtration facility, these pipelines are one of our initial steps that we are doing towards implementation of our seismic implementation plan. These are an important component of our backbone, which we are required to have to be able to comply with Oregon resiliency goals for our targeted states of recovery. So not only are we connecting to a seismically resilient facility that will enable us to continue to serve water, but we are taking some of the first steps in connecting the pipeline that will be able to get the water to the facility. In addition, there is a small section downstream of the facility of the existing conduits that has failed in the not so distant past. Of course, it failed on 4th of July, I think. Things tend to fail on holidays. And so we will be replacing a portion of that as it is in the current finished water proposed alignment. Next slide. So the designer selection process that was used was a formal PTE, request for proposal process. I would like to point out that this RFP was issued in January 24th of 2020. So the RFP was issued almost a year ago. Proposals were received in early March. Three firms proposed on the project. Two firms were interviewed. The selection criteria, both that we required in the RFP and the interview process, centered a lot on equity, demonstrated large project experience, the ability to deliver a large complex project on time, on schedule, and budget, demonstrated technical ability, demonstrated community partnerships in working on complex projects that will impact a community to this degree, and large diameter pipe seismic design. Jacobs Engineering and McMillan Jacobs were the firms that were selected. Next slide. So this design contract has four general area or contract components. The prime, Jacobs Engineering, has 45% of the contract, and that includes the design of that over 7 miles of large diameter steel main from 66 to 72 inches in diameter. This main will be designed to be seismically resilient, and one of the benefits coming out of this project and this program will be a set of seismic design standards that we can use and apply to our future seismic implementation plan and conduit projects. Tunneling, as we pointed out, not only do we have trenchless crossings of some of the assets in the area, but we also have a very large tunnel estimated to be approximately 1,500 feet long, approximately 15 feet wide or in diameter, so quite large. Tunneling, as one could expect, is a there's not very many firms that do this work. It can be a high-risk item, and in order to ensure that this project was successful and could be delivered as efficiently as possible, it was critical for there to be tunnel experts on this project, and that is the largest sub on this project of McMillan Jacobs at 25%. Contingency, the design contract does have just under 9% contingency for unknown unknowns. And then 20.93% of the contract is going to co-bid firms. And in order to not confuse co-bid and COVID, and thank you, Nikki, I do have all of the letters spelled out, but going forward, I will try to refer to these as certified firms. So the design contract includes all of this additional scope, which gives us additional field investigations and analysis that will help guide this design with an informed understanding of soil, seismic, groundwater, and other conditions along the pipeline routes. This design work can then use this information to help identify the best methods for protecting wetlands and creeks, preserving farm and forest practices in the surrounding area, and avoiding disruption to groundwater supplies. Next slide. So it is very, it is a very important component, as Nikki touched on earlier, for the program team for equity. And I'd like to extend my appreciation and acknowledgement of all of the work that this council has done to help support the bureaus and to help point out and reinforce these participation goals. One of the first things that the program did, and I've been blessed to be on this program since the beginning, when we first were given the direction from council in 2017 to move forward with filtration, we recognized not only the huge amount of work that was in front of us, but we also recognized the opportunity that this could create for our local businesses and consultants. We were given that authorization in, I think, August of 2017. And in December, one of the very first actions we took was to actually host an event at Oahu to try to not only let our subs know of the importance that we were going to be requiring on this contract and importance of participation and effort for equity, but also to try to start making those connections. As hopefully Nikki, hopefully you understood from what Nikki was trying to express, we consider this at a programmatic level. It was one of the key components of the first program manager contract that we let to have people like Nikki on board to help us build this participation. This contract in particular has the 20.93%, so $6.07 million out of the $29 million contract will be going to certified firms.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you. I was just noticing your breakdown of minority-owned business firms, the disaggregation, and just was curious as to, there were no African-American firms that applied. And I see that there's 2.7% women-owned businesses, and would be grateful for a demographic breakdown of that as well.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. I have a couple of points on that I will share. One, the women-owned business is also partly under the minority business enterprise. One of the significant efforts that the design consultant put forward, Jacobs, was to build a relationship with Paramount Consulting, a CAD firm, and they basically have developed an entire business plan to help that business grow from being a smaller one or two person shop to a large firm. They have dedicated them to that so much that the firm has turned down other future work. They recently lost their certification, but we did not want to send them out. So they are currently under the MBE. With the goal of helping them get their certification back and continuing that dedication to supporting them to grow their business. In addition, there is a very
Jody.
Yeah.
Woman-owned firm that is led by people of color?
Not by Black, no, it's just women-owned.
And so we're counting a woman-owned business as part of the minority numbers. Is that what I understood?
Yes.
Okay, I'll let you finish your sentence before I ask why.
Well, I was trying to explain what that dedication was that this team has had to the consultants that they have committed the work to. I know one of your other questions had to do with why there were no Black-owned firms. There is a reality in this environment that there are a fairly limited number of Black-owned firms with experience in water and wastewater design. That is a significant reason why the program itself has dedicated time and effort to be able to grow capacity in those areas. There was at least one firm that was offered work on this project, but declined because of the sheer size of this project and feeling that they were already at full capacity. There are some other challenges with this particular design contract in that it is the last design contract on this project or on this program. And based on that, there were some challenges in needing to ensure that firms had capacity, or if they had capacity to take on this additional work. And there was also a need to confirm that there was no conflict of interest. So the fact that the consultant was able to work through all of those issues and bring forward a participation that exceeds the 20%, we feel is a good representation of effort on their part. In addition, there were other firms that they did work with that to try to offer goals similar to what Nikki has mentioned that the program is offering of building support that were not necessarily taken advantage of. And the firm does continue to have multiple efforts that they're doing outside of just trying to increase equity and participation beyond just this project.
Thank you, Jody. But this project is a significant size project that doesn't represent, it barely represents Latino business owners, and it doesn't represent African-American business owners at all. And I do remember that when the firm presented to us earlier, there was a commitment made that I, in my mind, is not kept if this is the breakdown of who's going to benefit from this massive contract. So thank you.
All right, are there any other questions on this slide?
Nope, good to go.
Okay, let's move to the next slide. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for your comments. You've heard not only with this proposal, but with an additional proposal earlier today, you've heard some of the benefits of alternative procurement, particularly the construction manager general contractor request that we have before you today. The primary benefit of this procurement method, delivery method, is the ability to use the community benefits agreement to help to ensure that we achieve commitment and additional labor hours for minorities and women for trades, in the trades. There are additional benefits beyond just that, that help to ensure the project can be delivered, meeting scope, schedule, and budget to keep the project within the bounds and to recognize that that is the most efficient way of delivering work for our customers. And that includes value engineering and constructability reviews during design, an ability to start quickly to keep compliance schedule on track, early collaboration on sequencing that can limit community impacts as we sequence our work with that of the filtration facility. Expertise building complex pipelines and tunnel facilities, and experience connecting to active large diameter pipelines and bringing them online, all while continuing to serve our community. And if there are no questions on that, I will turn it over to Kathleen Brennis-Mora.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Kathleen Brennis-Marua again, Interim Chief Procurement Officer. I have been working very closely with the Water Bureau in the past several months and my team in the past year to solicit for the design services contract and select this contractor, and also working with them to ensure their program was meeting the equity requirements. I'm here today to ask council to recommend that council authorize the design services project contract with Jacobs, and also approve the exemption from competitive low bid to be able to issue a solicitation for a construction manager, general contractor services a contract for the construction of the Bull Run Pipelines project. And I will turn it back to Gabe for closing remarks.
Thanks, Kathleen. And I just wanted to give an opportunity to Brad Phelps with Jacobs. I know Commissioner Hardesty, some of your comments or questions related to the Jacobs commitment. And I just wanted to note that we do have Brad available if you would like to ask him any comments or questions, or if he would like to give comments on your questions.
If he wants to respond to my questions, I think that would be fine, Gabriel. I think it's more a city council decision about whether or not we actually support a proposal that does not reflect the values that we say we have as a city council. So
Well, then I will wrap up our presentation. And if there are questions later on, or if the public members of the public would like to speak to those items, I would certainly invite that. I know that we've given you a lot of information here at the end of what has been a very long day. And I know that there's public testimony to come. So just to bring us back to where we are with these items, we're requesting approval of a design contract for the Bull Run pipelines. We're also requesting an alternative procurement process to allow a construction manager general contractor approach rather than low bid, as you heard, to allow us to bring you all of the contract elements that you heard today. I want to thank you for your questions and your engagement and your leadership on this. This is a process, and I know that we get better with every time that we're talking about this, with all of the engagement that we have. So I thank you for your comments, particularly to Commissioner Hardesty, and I hope that that you'll see through this process how we are living up to those city values.
Gabrielle, I do have one more question before we go to public testimony. And my question is, why not wait until mid-January, the end of January, when we have a new council to vote on these two ordinances?
Yes, thanks for that question. And it doesn't seem like a big difference in timeframe, but we did look at this and it does severely compromise our ability to meet that 2022 deadline. I know that feels awfully far away from us in this year of 2020, but we that time commitment is coming at us fairly quickly and we have a lot to do before that timeframe. So that is one of the milestones that's specified in the agreement that we have with EPA and OHA. So we would be in danger of missing that if we delayed.
Thank you.
All right, any further questions before we move to public testimony? And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for your questions. I found those good questions and interesting responses. How many people do we have signed up, Keelan?
We have 8 people on the line.
All right, let's hear them.
First up, we have Ian Corder.
Hi, Ian.
Hey, good afternoon. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, definitely. Can we, Keelan, can
good
we-
Good afternoon, can you hear me?
Yeah, 1 second though. Keelan, can we go off the shared screen, please, so we can see the speakers? Thank you. We can hear you, go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Ian Corder. I'm the owner of West Slope Farms. I'm also on the Cottrell Community Planning Organization Steering Committee. CPOs, as they're called in Clackamas County, is the vehicle that Clackamas County uses to seek public feedback on development projects. And so Cottrell CPO is actually located directly adjacent to this site. In fact, most of the raw water pipes that you've seen presented today transit through Clackamas County. So there are a number of us that are obviously very concerned about this project. In fact, on the whole, and this is kind of the gist of my comment to you today, is that I want to make sure the council understands that this community does not support this project. We are not comfortable with this proposal. There has been an effort on the part of the Water Bureau, as Bonita described, to explain to us what the city plans to do. But we are in no way supporting this, and we have near unanimous opposition to this with just a few members that are even willing to attend those SAG meetings. So I want to make sure that you guys realize that because we don't like what's coming our way. It's going to negatively impact agriculture in this rural community. This is rural Clackamas and Multnomah County that's being affected. This is high value agricultural land. And so we don't like this proposal with the amount of resources that the city has at its disposal. I mean, we're talking about a project that will cost something in the billions. And lots of staff available to work on this. So we would like the city to work out a solution that doesn't harm local agriculture and local private property owners. That's something that we could get behind. So for what it's worth, know that we aren't supporting this, and we would like the council to direct the Water Bureau to pursue an alternative solution to the city's water quality issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Appreciate your testimony.
Next up, we have Lauren Corder.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, you sound great.
Okay, welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Corder, and I am a Clackamas County resident, the owner of West Slope Farms, the secretary of the Cottrell CPO, and the Pleasant Home Community Association. The proposed pipeline and the facility will directly and negatively impact my family and farm. My adamant opposition to the mega industrial Bull Run filtration project is the resounding sentiment of my fellow neighbors and our agricultural community. You are sitting here today to decide on funding a very expensive pipeline that would not be needed if the facility were located elsewhere and closer to the main conduit. The proposed site at Carpenter Lane is off the main conduit by over a mile, resulting in ratepayers' burden with an excess of hundreds of millions of dollars. Commissioner Fritz, Director Gabe Solmer, and Engineer Dave Peters are putting the cart before the horse. To date, hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent and appropriated towards this project. However, they are not certain the facility can be built at Carpenter Lane. It is unclear if Multnomah County Planning will approve their needed land use change from residential agricultural use to industrial, and I will tell you why approval should not happen. There is zero community support. This project will not primarily serve our community. The mega industrial operation does not fit within the character of the community. The city will convert Class 1 and Class 2 soils of high value farmland to industrial use across both Multnomah and Clackamas counties. Wetlands will be destroyed throughout the routes of the raw untreated pipelines. The facility and pipeline significantly threatens our groundwater sources, as we've seen last year with the compromised well of my neighbor. Your constituents are hurting and struggling. In November, they said no to Commissioner Fritz's ballot measure to allow City Council to take advantage of water revenue resources for non-water service projects. Now is the time to listen. They do not trust how the city and the Water Bureau spends their money. Stop investing hundreds of millions of dollars of their money into something that may not happen. Now is also the time to find a real solution that does not allow your big budget Water Bureau to steamroll us rural neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Next up, we have Kelly Kupchuk.
Thank you, Keelan, and thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I'm Kelly Kupchuk. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Tradeswomen. It's my pleasure to be here with you today. I want to say from an organizational standpoint, we do support the proposal in regards to the community benefits agreement and considerations around alternative procurement. I want to acknowledge and Commissioner Hardesty's concerns about the challenges for minority firms. And while that's not our specific area of expertise, we do realize that it's really critical for our community to look at where there can be support to develop more firms in those specific areas of expertise. But with regards to the workforce, we support it because it's an opportunity to ensure that historically underrepresented workforce, which includes Black, Indigenous, people of color, and women, opportunities to not just have a job, but a career in family-supporting jobs that bring much-needed wages and benefits to our communities. We, last year, Oregon Tradeswomen alone, the women we served, 63% were low-income women. And upon completing our program, the average hourly wage last year was $21.81. So if we look at that average wage and the number of women we put to work last year, that amounts to almost $3 million going back into the community
from wages. That doesn't include, because, and I apologize, I don't have the figures for my colleagues at POIC, Portland Youth Builders and Constructing Hope, who also work really hard like we do to ensure folks that have traditionally not benefited from good jobs in the construction sector and public investment, those folks that they're putting to work as well. So we thank you for the equity framework that you have pushed forward for our city as council members and as mayor, and thank you for your continued support on policy levers to support equity.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for all the great work you do.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mayor, if I could ask Kelly a question.
Of course.
Kelly, of the women who go through your training program, can you tell me what's the percentage that become journeymen?
Thank you for that question. And that is a challenge sometimes to track, Commissioner Hardesty, because sometimes, so just so that you know, we follow up individually with folks who graduate from our program, and we compare that against statistics from Oregon Labor and Industries. So we have about an 87% retention rate from women who complete our program through to journey level. And I'm sure there's some folks that we're missing here and there that we just lose track with, but that is in general a very high retention rate for women in the industry overall. It's a challenging industry also for their white male counterparts because of the nature of the work, the challenges around it being seasonal and things like that. But we're working harder all the time with our colleagues at POIC, Portland Youth Builders and Constructing Hope to increase those numbers.
Well, 80-some percent is a pretty good darn number. When I hear from folks how hard it is to get people from pre-apprenticeship to journeyman, I will be holding you up as a model for if you're intentional, we're able to make it happen.
Hold us up in a model when we have more than 8% of women in the trades. I mean, I appreciate that, and we do work hard to ensure those numbers, but we still, even though we're more than twice the national average, the national average is only 3% of women in the trades, we still have a lot more work to do to get women in. And as you know, one of the challenges is getting in and getting that opportunity. So policy levers like a community benefits agreement can really help. And what we'd really like to see, and I hope this, I know it's not an immediate issue that we can address, but long-term, Commissioner Hardesty, is helping those women who've been in the trades for a while become owners. Yes. Especially within the specialty trades, so they can be successful in competing and working on projects like this one in the future.
Well, I certainly look forward to working with you, Kelly, and POIC and your other partners to figure out how we make that more of a reality at the City of Portland than an aspiration, which is, I feel like, what it is today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question. Kelly, good to see you. How are you? Come back on the, I want to see your face.
Good to see you too. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, how many?
No one else has said that to me all year, by the way, so thanks.
How many years is it usually to go from pre-apprentice to the journey person?
So it depends on the craft. And amongst pre-apprenticeship training programs are the length of our programs varies also. So you might guess with Portland Youth Builders and POIC that serve youth, their programs are longer because they're also helping program participants get their GED and high school diploma. Whereas Constructing Hope and Oregon Tradeswomen, who primarily serve adults, ours are shorter in length. But you might have a registered apprenticeship program, such as the laborers, which is 2 years, and then a mechanical trade like the electricians or steam fitters, which has higher technical skills, is 5 years. But the beauty of registered apprenticeship is that it's an earn while you learn model. So right. Folks, you know, unlike college, they're not just in school for those 3, 4, or 5 years. They're in class, but they're also at work earning a wage.
No, thank you, Kelly. As you know, in my previous role, I'm that's how I know you. And it's just good for the public to know it's a process. And I appreciate that you brought up the partners at POIC and Portland Youth Builders, because that might take a little bit longer, but that's the pipeline that we have to keep investing in.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Commissioner Ryan.
Sure.
Thanks, Kelly.
Next up, we have Ronfi Villatoro.
Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Can you all hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Great. Thank you. Well, hi, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Hardesty, Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Ryan. My name is Ronfi Villatoro, and I'm the Oregon Policy Coordinator with the Blue-Green Alliance. We are a coalition of labor and environmental organizations aimed to address our environmental challenges while creating good, quality jobs. Blue-Green Alliance is guided by the principle that we can no longer choose between good jobs and a clean and safe environment. But the actions we take to create quality jobs and to protect working people and the environment must go hand in hand, and that together we will build a thriving and fair economy. Our Oregon members include the Oregon AFL-CIO, Oregon Environmental Council, Climate Solutions, Sierra Club, IBW 48, United Steelworkers, just to name a few. On that note, we support the measure to utilize an alternative contracting method for the Bull Run pipeline. BJ recognizes that the multiple benefits of job creation, health, and overall well-being to our communities that elevates the importance of utilizing alternative contracting method to ensure that we're contracting the best in the industry with the technical know-how and that can demonstrate a history of performance to deliver a quality water system on time and on budget. And I think there's no need to mention, of course, you know, experiences like Flint, Michigan, and trying to avoid similar mishaps that we've seen in other cities and jurisdictions. In addition, we support the alternative contracting method as it entails in utilizing the city CBA that allows for clear goal setting of recruiting, training, and hiring goals for women and people of color, and setting contracting goals for women and BIPOC-owned firms, or specifically co-bid firms. And that projects like this have the opportunity to demonstrate the nothing about us, without us sort of mentality towards development and construction. You know, this past June, our organization published the Water Works, the Job Creation Potential for Repairing America's Water Infrastructure, that sets recommendations for the federal, state, and municipal governments around how we invest in our water infrastructure, making sure that we're going from sort of a D grade rating from the ASCE, sorry, the engineering publishing firm, to getting us on track for a B rating throughout our country. We hope that the city of Portland can be a case model for our country. And on that note, I just want to sort of address, like, I think we always at BGA, we always recommend good proactive engagement with our communities. And obviously, wherever possible, always trying to move the needle on diverse contracting. So just wanted to know, Commissioner Hardesty, on your comments, you know, I think there's always a challenge to diversifying on the design phase, and I think we're always supportive trying to advance that as much as we can early on. So appreciate those comments, and I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty, you do have a comment, your hand's raised, but I think that may be.
It's from last time, sorry.
No worries, no problem. Thanks, Ramfi.
Next up, we have Michael Birch.
Hi, Michael.
Hello. I'm assuming you can hear me from the faces I see.
We can hear you, and we can see a picture of your beautiful visage as well.
That's hanging up in the office, and thank you. So, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in favor of utilizing the alternative procurement process on a Bull Run treatment project, and I support the community benefits agreement. Of course, you know that. So a disclaimer is I wrote a 2-minute speech, and then as I listened to the presentation, I felt like most of it wasn't necessary because you're using the CBA, which we're usually testifying to get you to use, and alternative procurement process. We also advocate for that, but you're using it, you have goals. But in addition to that, community benefit agreements, when utilized in succession, provide the continuity of opportunity for people in the community who look like me and women to not only start a pre-apprenticeship program with the goal of getting into an apprenticeship and journeying out, but it also provides opportunities for contractors to not only sign on into the scope of work that they're used to and build their business, but to actually participate with companies who have the spirit of a community benefits agreement to help them venture into areas that they have not gone before, support the contractors financially and with back office support to get into areas where they previously have not been. So I commend you on using the CBA, and I would encourage you to begin the process of putting in place the Labor Management Community Oversight Committee early, because in with respect to Commissioner Hardesty's questions, we cannot act as though we're on a level playing field. I'm speaking here in terms of African-American firms, the minority firms, the certified firms. We're not on a level playing field. We're playing catch up. And without processes in place to give us a leg up, we're gonna always be playing catch up. I wasn't surprised to see that there weren't any African-Americans listed. It wasn't pleasant to see it, but I wasn't surprised, because in this process, the design phase, we don't have a lot of our businesses involved. So I'm in favor of this. I'm in favor of you getting started on the LMCOC early so that we can get involved in creating a transparent, open process so that the businesses that want to be on this job can be on it. The people who we are recruiting into the pre-apprenticeship programs and into our apprenticeship programs, including those on the out-of-work list now, actually know they have a place to go. So thank you for the work you've done and that you have embarked on. Hopefully, we will have a chance to get involved early on instead of later. These are real people who are not having access to these jobs, to these careers. The longer we wait, the fewer of them have hope. So thank you for the work you're doing. Each of you on the proposal, thank you for your work, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Michael. We appreciate it. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, and thank you to Michael and everybody else who testified. I know we're not quite done with the testimony list, but I wanted to acknowledge that you were here this morning and then you're here this afternoon, and you've been great partners on this project. So thank you for your support. It's good to see and hear from you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
Mayor, may I?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Commissioner Hardesty. I thought that was the same hand raised. Commissioner Hardesty.
No, I put it down before. Michael, I had a couple of questions for you. Do you know if there are any African-American-owned non-certified design firms operating in the city of Portland?
I do not, but I know who could answer that question.
Who could answer that?
I think that you could go to Professional Business Development Group or NAMAC and find out if they have folks listed that work in that arena.
I would have wished that the proposal had gone there and answered that question, because then I wouldn't have had to have asked that question. Thank you. My second question is really around if we share the goal of increasing contracting opportunities for African Americans in the Portland metro area, yet we approve a no bid process that starts off with no African-American firms being a part of it, why would we expect that we're going to somehow get different results at the end?
You're asking me? What I would say, Commissioner, is that with the establishment of an LMCOC early on, we do the outreach to the folks that we know in the community who do this work. We encourage them to bid. And people are hungry. People are interested in bidding this work. They're interested in no longer sitting on the sidelines. They have the ability to reach out and draw from their training programs, the diversity they need. If they need it, they may come with it. But if they need it, we have women, we have people of color. And I would add to that, that we would have more African-Americans if we had more community benefit agreements requiring them to be on these jobs.
And we're not requiring them to be on this job. So I don't know if that is true.
I don't think that's quite accurate. What I think is in this particular phase of the project, the design phase, there may not be any African-American businesses, but in concrete, in pipe work, in earth moving, yeah, Michael Martin, we have a lot of African-Americans contractors that will bid this work. So I think this is a small portion of it.
Well, and, thank you, Michael. I did intentionally put you on the spot, but I knew you were a man that could handle being put on the spot. I wanted those questions and answers on the record from someone that was not a city employee. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Michael.
Next up, we have Keith Edwards.
Hi, Keith. And Keelan, while Keith is coming on, how many more folks do we have signed up?
Two more, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioners. And also thank you, the staff, for the presentation today. I thought that was very informative. I'm with Constructing Hope. I've been on the board for many years now, and we certainly support the alternative procurement process, as well as saying yes to the CBA. We're partners with MAWE, Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity, and have been for many years now as well. And most of what I was gonna say has been covered in previous testimony. I guess what I would like to say in regards to the process of not having so many contractors that look like me on this, on a project like this, is that what happens in our industry, in the construction industry, is typically most of the contractors are grown from the apprenticeship program. They become apprentices, they become journeymen, and once they complete the journeyman level, then they sometimes go into business. And this opportunity is provided in this kind of a project because the CMGC process and the CBA will enable those people of color that look like me to be on these projects and be able to get some more training and complete their apprenticeships. As Kelly said, I'm a retired electrician. Though it takes 5 years to become a journeyman electrician. It takes another 3-4 years after that completion before you get your supervisor's license to become a contractor. So I just wanted to share those things so that, you know, just for your edification, and so you'll have a better understanding of how that works. That happens more on these kind of projects that utilize the CBA than they do other projects that do not. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Next up, we have Bob Carroll.
Mr. Carroll, thank you. Welcome.
Hi there, how are you doing today?
Well, thanks.
Thank you for allowing me to speak, Mayor and Commissioners. Like Michael said, you know, most of this has all been said that I just wadded my notes up and threw them away a little while ago. So I would say that number one, I'm an IBEW 48 member, electrical workers, and I'm also president of the Columbia Pacific Building Trades. And both the IBEW and the building trades are in support of the alternative method of bid process to select the CMGC and, you know, the benefits that come to the community from that. And, you know, one of the biggest benefits that I see is the CBA and, you know, equity both in contracting and workforce. You know, other benefits also are greater safety, more highly qualified contractors that can just step right into this job and get going with it. They don't need to be trained per se to on a job like this. So I have to give a big shout out to Kelly Kupchak too, because the Women in the Trades is just a great, great organization, and you know, they do their big event at our training center every year. It's just a great deal. So we support the CMGC process and this alternative bid and the CBA, and we hope that it can continue to go on. And as Michael Birch said, getting the LMCOC going early would be an excellent thing to do so that we can help this whole process and help our community more. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And last up, we have Mark Matthews.
Last but not least, welcome, Mark.
Hello. Hello, everyone. This is Mark with Pacific Mark Construction, and I want to thank you, Mayor, and all you commissioners for having me here to speak with you today. Pacific Mark, I'm the president of Pacific Mark. We've been in Portland, Oregon, working for about 20 years. And I have twofold things to say on. One is going to be the CMGC and why I think it's incredible. And the second one is going to be the CBA. The CMGC, as an African-American business who has been struggling here in Portland for years, has been a great thing for our company. It's helped us grow tremendously. They say, where's all the people out there that minority or that look like me? Well, we have to start somewhere. We haven't done that in the past. Portland has not been too friendly to minority contractors. So I think the CMGC has been a wonderful thing to open people's eyes, include us from the get-go. We started with CMGC throughout Portland, Oregon, with schools and various different projects, which has been really great for Pacific Mark. But not only that, as CMGC, it's grown us to make us be able to grow everybody that look like us, that subcontractors, now they're general contractors. So we're starting to build that for CMGC is a great thing because that's where the rubber meets the road. And I think that's where we kind of like that Portland has been lacking in that area. When it comes to the CBA, now we're looking at totally different. We still were being excluded from different parts of these big jobs. And I noticed they tried, the city has tried the CBA in the past. It didn't work very well. So what we all, everybody got together, the community leaders, the unions, and little businesses like ours, we all got in one room and start talking about how this CBA can work for everyone. And the CBA that we came up with, what happened in the past, there was too many loopholes. Now we've narrowed it down where the CBA is a very good, well machine. We just need projects to make it happen. And that's why we're pushing hard with the CBA because me, I, for one, after being in the room with them and working with them and trying to figure it all out, has been going to be a tremendously way to grow the business. And so that's why I really, really push for the CBA. So when you put those two things together, you got the CMGC, now you have the CBA, you're going to have a really good project that City of Portland can be proud of, the community can be proud of, and everyone in the community will take this on and recognize that this whole thing together is going to be a wonderful thing for the community, as well as for where you're trying to get to, which is the MWSBs, more of the minorities and more of the African-Americans. Just like Hardestine said, where are they? I haven't seen them. And so this is going to bring it together and make it marry together. And I commend you guys for working on your end to make it work for us, because now we can grow and the community can grow as well. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everybody who testified this afternoon. All right, colleagues, any further question before we call the roll? Oh, let's see. I think that's actually not right. Looks like file 963 is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. And then 976 is also a first reading of emergency ordinance or non-emergency ordinance. It also moves to second reading. Keelan, that completes the formal agenda. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Colleagues, if you'll bear with me for one more minute, there's something else I'd like to do. I'd like to recognize, before I close this meeting, Tia Williams from my team. Tia has been a member of my office team since last summer, and in addition to her policy portfolio, she has been my right-hand woman for almost every city council meeting since then. She keeps me on track, which is a nearly impossible task for those of you who know me. She is strong, she has collaborative relationships, and she's worked well with your offices and us as a council to make sure that we all function as a team. There's an incredible amount of coordination taking place ahead of these meetings, as you're all completely aware, and Tia has been both a rock and a rock star as my partner. Tia has also been our lead liaison with the Portland Housing Bureau and has worked with Director Callahan and her team to deliver great outcomes for her community. Lastly, I want to thank Tia for her work on the reinvestment initiative Council approved in the fall bump last month. She worked really closely with Reimagine Oregon to create an approach that will make the city's budget process more transparent and accessible to community and give community the power to reinvest city funds where they're the most needed. Today is Tia's last council meeting, and I'm both proud to see her take this next step in her career, and I'm also equally sad to lose her as a member of our collective team. Tia, thank you for your service to the city and the community, and all of us wish you the best of luck in the years ahead. Stay in touch. Thank you, and safe travels. And with that, colleagues, we are adjourned. Thank you all.